on 98FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Ronnie.
It's job. Dean Cox again. This time he's in. At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Leighton Orient a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll.
Jonathan Tahue.
Capable of anything. Tahue! Equaliser for Leighton Orient.
We're not a city. We're not a town. We're the only one of us around. And you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay an Orient from E10. Lay an Orient from.
And a very good evening to you. I hope you've had a great day. And in the studio tonight, we have Christian Wheeler. How are you, sir?
All good, thank you. Evening.
Good evening. And Barry Galvin sitting opposite me as well.
Good evening, Andy. I was here in plenty of time.
Well, you was. An all-time record. 8 minutes to spare. Well done.
Yeah.
You're
like
really,
to get
you're really coming along. And just to my right is Darren Burrows. Good evening, Darren.
Good evening, Andy. He will not be in time again, will he?
No, he's all right. He knows we're only mucking around.
I only get in time for the important things like Leighton Orient fixtures.
Yeah.
I like to keep you
are the announcer, mate, so this is what you do. Right.
I said I've never been late for that.
And he knows Kent's on the show tonight, so yeah, he made a show of things unlike, getting early.
Got your boss on the night.
Unlike Darius Henderson, I've got to say that. I've never been late.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah,
well
Mr.
done.
Mr. Teague is on, is he not?
Yes, he is. And we'll be talking about how he sees everything going along so far, and obviously we'll be touching on playing budgets, because I do think playing budgets played a big role in last Saturday's result, although some basic mistakes will also be covered, I think, and highlighted by Christian Wheeler, because Chris, it really was a case of almost Sunday morning standard defending, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I would think from a management point of view it's really disappointing to go there with maybe a threadbare team, youngsters on the bench, and to get undone ultimately by three set pieces, which, as you know, the higher you go normally, that's a Friday afternoon on the training ground that you practice both defending and attacking, and obviously in both boxes they were better than us.
Yeah, so I mean the basic thing here is, I mean, when you're defending, you were pointing it out in that group. Now just explain it to the listeners. What's the basic things you learn?
Well, I don't understand how I've watched them goals and both of them have let someone get a run and a jump on someone. As I say, normally that's one of the first things as a kid or in an academy that you're taught to lock on as tight as you can, get your arm across someone, get hold of them, obviously without committing a foul, and try and stop that run. Because obviously once someone gets a run on you, with the momentum, you're never going to stop it. And obviously the first two goals come from two people getting a run and a jump. And once they've got that momentum, it's very hard to sort of counteract that. But the modern day is to not get as tight, and sometimes the modern day is just to put two arms around people and wrestle them to the floor, rather than, you know, having your body open, getting your arm across, being able to see where the flight of the ball, and obviously stand as tight as you can to your man.
Darren, you were there.
Unfortunately, I had a better view of the goal than the other Orient fans as well, because I was in a different part of the ground, so I was directly behind the goal the first two goals were scored. And picking up what Christian said, I don't know, Terry agreed with you. Also, lucky to have Terry on a group chat. And Christian rightly reached out to Terry and said, Terry, what do you think? To sort of back up his own thoughts. And so it was interesting listening to the ex-pros and what they had to say about the rubbish defending. The thing for me, Andy, was for the first time I felt a team were both physically and technically better than us. Mm. And most teams we play, we can either technically slightly better than quite a lot of them, I thought. Physically, no. We're generally not a big physical side. But this side, they were both. We were well beat on the day. our players had the flip-flops on a little bit, Andy, if I'm brutally honest. And I'd give them, I'd cut them a bit of slack for that, because do you really want to get injured when you're playing for nothing with the summer coming up as a young pro? I
mean, should be playing for a contract, really.
Well,
yeah, no. Barry, I mean, you know, is it a case of the budgets where it's just really, you know, they're getting 30,000 a week, we're getting 7, 8, you're just not going to be able to compete anyway?
No, I don't know where their budget was in the league, but I imagine it was top three to four. I know Charlton were first, second, weren't they? And I think, were they top Derby? I think it might have been Derby or Bolton. But yeah, I did. They had a stronger and better team than us. I didn't expect a lot from the game, but I didn't see us getting undone by three set pieces, three corners. I think that's what's disappointing, that we didn't concede in open play, but we gave away three technically very poor goals. Let's be honest, going forward we didn't lay a glove on them, did we? You know, we weren't good. We certainly didn't deserve to win, and a draw would have been, obviously, would have been a bit harsh on them. But it was the manner of the goals that was disappointing. Even though I wasn't expecting a lot from the game, that wasn't how I saw it unfolding. I imagine there'd be one or two goals better than us because they were better than us. But, you know, that's football. That's the nature of football. And yeah.
You don't want to give it to him on a plate, though, do you?
That's a disappointing thing. I'll disagree about the slightly, down, as we do on this show, about flip-flops and stuff. I think, like, my view is if you're a pro, you should play 100% all the time. I know psychology plays a big part in sport, and I know you can't help it thinking, well, there's not a lot on this game. But I think, you know, pride, it's just the way I used to play, pride and the fact that you may be playing for a new contract or maybe playing a part on the team should make you...
My point, Barry, is that I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm saying I can understand it. That's what I said. Because
I can't understand it.
No, that's fair enough. But yeah. I mean, I had a tenner on us to lose 3-0. And
congratulations.
And when the third
goal... I don't think we want to hear that. Do we want to hear that?
When the third goal went in, and I looked at my mate Dave, I've been going with for 40 plus years, the look on his face, because he will not bet against Leighton Orient winning.
Did you cheer when that goal went in? That's what I want to know.
Did I cheer?
When it went in? Come on.
I didn't stand up. In the area I was in an area of Derby fans, and when the goals flew in, the first two, I sat in my seat.
You thought, one more.
Yeah. I did have a little lift out of my seat.
I can't believe this. This is terrible.
See, I looked at it Saturday morning, and they were Derby, but I still couldn't back them.
I had a tenner on Galvin in the National, obviously, and that came full, so I'm happy with that. But I can say that because it's not against Dory. Darren,
well, I lost 40 quid on the National, if it makes you feel better.
It does make you feel better, yeah, a lot better.
I had a bet on 4-1 years ago at Swindon, that Swindon were going up as champions and that they beat us 4-1, and it was 3-1 with about a minute left, and Swindon scored, and I must admit, I did automatically jump.
I'm not the only one there, did
I? I couldn't help it because I won the money.
As you and me, we're quite happy to put our emotions to one side.
Yeah. It's not often I'd cheer a goal against Dorian, but there's a few under.
I can give you one slight.
I'm with you, Andy. I'm with you.
Dear. Give you one slight difference on that. I had us to win 3-1 about 10 years ago. Not only, you know, put your colour quid and five or whatever. And it's the only time I've ever been distraught at an Orient goal. I think it was. There was a striker at the time. Someone slid in for a 95th minute. We were winning 3-1, and that was a good odds. And someone scored a fourth. And I saw it going, no! And it's the only time I've ever gone no and already scored a goal.
Right, well, I'll tell you what, let's hear what Richie had to say at the end of that game.
Richie, thanks for joining us. I'm sure you'll be very disappointed in the manner in which all three goals were conceded.
It wasn't just the goals, it was the performance in general. Everyone all over us, good team. Obviously, loads and loads of experience, full of men that have got hundreds and hundreds of games in the Championship, never mind League One, and it's overpowered us. Obviously, the players have been unbelievable this year, but they're probably just on the last legs, and we're asking too much of them with what we've got available. Obviously, Dan Agge can only do a certain amount of the game. We just run our steam a little bit, and today we had a good start. But I did warn the players. I said, I've come here as a lower club, and I've come here as a club that is on a par or probably bigger than this club, and I know what it's like when you're a smaller club. You come here, this is nice, get on the ball, it feels good, but you get the basics, and we didn't match our duels. Percentage of duels won was poor. Obviously the big one was the set plays, and when you start the game okay and the set plays two in a quick space of time, it becomes really difficult. But I just think, yeah, we've run out of legs.
The first one, is it going down as an own goal to George Moncur?
No, I think it was Sonny Bradley, no. Well, I think so.
Yeah. So we've confirmed that one later. But all three from corner kicks must be so frustrating for you.
The set plays was a big game. And listen, I would have loved to have gone bigger today, but I just haven't got the personnel to go bigger. we had to play Jack Simpson, who's played his first 90 minutes in 7 months. And at times you can see Jack's a good player, but at times you can see that his legs just don't move that quickly to get him into certain positions. But you look at their delivery, it was flat, it was quick. They put bodies in the 6-yard box, so aggressive. When you look at our delivery, it's hung up, it's floaty. There's no aggression to get in there. So I think it's something that we need to improve next year. We've done well, but I think that set plays in this division, if you can score a lot more than you concede, I think it can get, you know, an extra 12, 15 points.
How are we going to approach the remaining games now?
Differently to today. I thought, listen, it was a difficult game for us. And listen, they just overpowered us, even though they played 24 hours later than us. It's a good learning curve for us because I never seen their midfield player. I didn't really see them spraying balls around, but they never get caught on the ball. They don't let things bounce. They win duels, and if it's there to be hooked on, they hook the ball in areas and they turn our centre-backs. When it goes out to their wing-backs, they put balls down the side for runners. They get to the byline, they cross it. And we just need, like, we take a touch when it's not on. You can see people coming off the sides. We take a touch, we go foul away. We take a touch, you nick it off us. So I think today's a good learning curve for us. We've learnt from Bolton. These are different than Bolton. Bolton rotations and tactically are really, really good. The pace and power that, for example, when we're breaking with Ollie O'Neill and Shaka are two really good athletic players, but he just run out of legs. They're catching us, we come inside too early, and they end up countering us. When it goes to Mendes Lang, when it goes to there, Smith, the other side, they're gone. It ends up, they're going round us, or they get into the byline. So I hope that you look at the team that we've started, all of us started, and the subs that have come on, a really young group that I hope they can take something and learn from, because they need to. We've not got players ready enough, so none of our players could play for their team. They might do if they improve over the next 6, 12, 18 months. They've got a chance to play at big clubs like this, but at the moment they're not ready and need to learn little things. They've got a wealth of experience in a team, and you need to go through these stages as a 19, 20, 21 year old player, but they've got little things that they do that we don't quite do, and that's why they're second in the league and we're 10th.
Fleetwood next, they could still survive. Is it going to be a chance for you to give some youngsters a chance?
Yeah, it's really difficult when you're in our position and everybody goes and they've got nothing to play for, and let's just enjoy the end of the season. You only enjoy it by performing well and winning. And I think it's a slant on myself when people go, oh, they're not playing for anything, because we try every week. We tried today, we was nowhere near the level. So I think it's about enjoying the last two games, last home game of the season, but performing well and showing an enthusiasm and an athleticism to go and try and win the game.
Good luck. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Gaffer.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dave, for chatting away with Richie there. And he said we were nowhere near the mark, and I think that's what we've pretty much agreed with. I'll tell you what we'll do. Before we get hold of the one and only Mr. Kent Teague, let's hear this week's Victor's View.
Firstly, congratulations to Club Secretary Lindsay Martin on receiving her EFL award. Recognition for her incredible dedication and commitment to our club over so many years. I know what an important part that Lindsay played to ensure the best for Lake Nyant during those dark and chaotic times under the previous regime. Lindsay has been an unsung hero for far too long. This is an award she fully deserves. Of course, it's just two games remaining of a campaign that has seen the O's recover from a difficult start to steadily climb up the table, despite Richie Wellens being unable to field his strongest side at any point during the season. A highlight of which has to be that wonderful performance at Fratton Park. The O's the last team to beat Portsmouth before they went on to lift the title. 7 first-team regulars out of contention on Saturday, and they were missed. Derby, without doubt, one of the best teams in the division, and I expect they'll join Pompey in the Championship next season, but conceding 3 goals from corners is a concern. Our travelling support has been remarkable this season, and the 1,300 who made their first journey to Pride Park were magnificent. I believe it's important to finish the campaign on a high, especially at Brisbane Road, but I've been impressed by the way in which Charlie Adam has acted since becoming the third manager at the Highbury Stadium this season. He inherited a side that had won just 6 of 22 games under Lee Johnson, losing 10 the former Scottish international has installed a fighting spirit, which has enabled some significant performances, including a 2-2 draw at Port Vale when Town scored in the 88th and 93rd minute. Saturday's victory over Northampton and taking the early lead at Peterborough on Tuesday night demonstrates the threat that Fleetwood will still present to the O's and the chances of sending the faithful home celebrating a victory at the weekend. Tuesday night's defeat at Posh means that the hopes of achieving a great escape depend on the Cod Army winning their remaining two matches. Victory at Brisbane Road would set up a possible winner-takes-all encounter on the last day of the season when Burton go to the Fylde Coast, whilst the O's will want to secure a top-10 finish and mark the season back in League One, with the O's faithful hearing status quo rocking all over the world once more.
Well, thanks very much.
How are you?
Very good. We've got Kent Teague on the line, and good evening, Kent.
Good evening, all.
Good evening, everyone. Right. How are you, sir, anyway? Are you over in the country at the moment?
Doing well. I am actually flying to London tonight. I will be there for this weekend.
I look forward to seeing you. We've got lots of questions for you, Kent. And but I'll just, first of all, a few people have sort of intimated at the same thing. When you take over a company, when you come into a company and revive it, looking at your track record, you normally stick around about 7-8 years and then move on. So you've shifted a few shares and things like that. You've offloaded a few shares. How is your commitment now to Orient going forward? Are you in that 7-year itch mode, or are you very much sticking?
Well, I'm not in any way in a 7 or 8 year itch mode to go do another football club. So I don't have that. I've been offered to be a part of a number of different clubs, both outside of English football, and have not been willing to do that. I would say that my commitment to Leighton is pretty strong. It's probably not at the same level that it was when we first started, but that all has to do that we've accomplished what, was kind of set out for me to accomplish. And I think there's a natural shift that's happened in our family where we've had our first grandson. So I'm wanting to spend more time in the United States and in Texas than I have before. So I'm not making it to as many matches this season as I have in seasons past. And so there are slight adjustments to, I guess you would call it a lifestyle, that are kind of being accomplished along the way.
Yeah, but your commitment to the club...
But just as an example, I've been on 3 different calls this morning about Leighton Orient Football Club. So, I think I continue to do a lot of work in the background with Nigel and Mark and Martin and Richie. And I think that part of the commitment is the same. But my in front of the fans has been lessened a little bit over time.
That's fair enough. Okay, well, we've got quite a lot of questions that have come through, so from various sources. So if we can fire them at you, Kent, if that's okay. And
absolutely.
Yeah, first one's from Larry. How disappointed would you be if you achieved the same results next season, in other words, finished outside of the playoff?
My expectation is that we'll finish out of the playoffs next year. We've got a number of sides that are leaving League One, both directions. I think the strength of the clubs that are in League One next year are going to be stronger than they were this year. I would not set the expectation. I would not do it. I'm not sure the board would do it. And I'm not sure it would be fair to Richie to do it and Martin to do it where we say it is playoffs or else. We typically set the expectation a little bit lower and then allow Richie to overcommit. And I think a lot of that will come in what happens in the summer window. Who knows? We might get a number of players in this summer window that makes it to where our chances of being in the playoffs are more realistic than not. But I would not commit to us being in the playoffs next year, you know, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, on that then, and that's just me asking now, it seemed to me that it was probably a free hit for Richie this season. If you're saying you're not expecting to do that, is it a bit of a free hit again next year, or is the pressure on him?
Well, the pressure is always on Richie to achieve certain objectives. And it doesn't matter in any one season. We have specific objectives at the board, or we have like a floor that we expect. And while the floor of what we set this year may move up next year, that floor would not be in the playoffs. So it's not like we can finish, 24, 23, 22, 21, 20th. I don't think we can finish 20th next year and say that Richie gets a pass. So, you know, there are objectives, but they're not the playoffs for us to set.
Okay, this next question is from Frank Johnson. It says, how do you see the club's future at Brisbane Road, and have you any plans to buy the lease from Barry Hearn?
We don't have plans to buy the lease from Barry Hearn, and we don't have plans to buy the stadium or the ground from Barry. We are exploring other options outside of Brisbane Road, but we're in the very, very early years. So probably takes 7 to 10 years, if it were to happen, to get a new stadium built. And so we're going to be at Brisbane Road for quite a while.
Yeah, and on that note, Dennis Barefield said, is the leasehold of the ground holding the club back? If we owned it, would we get more investment?
No, we wouldn't necessarily get more investment. And the reason is that, we would have to get more investment to buy the ground. And so from that perspective, we could, because we would make it an asset-backed transaction as opposed to the type of transaction that it is now. But I don't really think that Barry wants to sell the stadium. We've had conversations with him about it. I don't think he necessarily wants to sell it. It's in his pension fund, and I'm not sure we really want to buy it, because it is quite a capital expenditure to buy the stadium. And I think we would prefer to have that capital spent on a different stadium, new stadium.
It would be a limited asset, wouldn't it, really, because you can't really grow in that stadium.
Correct. And we've looked at all kinds of schemes to grow in that stadium. Everything from pushing the north stand, pushing the south stand back and buying out all of the flats that are on the north side, on the south side. Sorry, I get north and south confused.
That's right.
And so even though I am an IFR rated pilot, you think I would know which direction I'm supposed to go.
At least you're not air traffic control.
Well, I'm not flying even a drone at Brisbane Road. So
right.
I think the thing is that we've looked at all kinds of expansion plans there, and there's a whole lot of like what goes on in the league and how you get slotted and what the new expectations are going to be for financial fair play and all that. So we believe that over the long term, we would need to increase the number of people that we have consistently coming to the stadium in order to remain as a League One and Championship viable club.
That's fair enough. Nick Clark says, how will the budget compare next season to this? Percentage-wise, I guess.
The overall budget will compare pretty close to this year. We have a number of capital expenditures that are being thought about here that have to do with the training ground and investigation of the stadium. The playing budget will go up It won't be a substantial increase, but we're having those conversations with Richie and Mark and Martin about what is the appropriate number for it to be next year. In fact, one of the calls that I had this morning was about a 45-minute call on that exact topic.
Right. Well, Nick also asks, how's Richie's contract talks progressing?
It's doing very well. Let's see. What do y'all say? Watch this space? Is that what y'all say? Something like that? That's like y'all's term, watch this space?
Yeah.
I would just say watch this space over the next couple of weeks. I thought when I was there for April Fool's Day, I thought that the contract would have been completed by now, but it's not. It's not exactly signed off on completely yet, but those things are in process.
All right. He's asked you to rate this season out of 10.
Out of 10, I would say 8.
Fair enough.
The only reason I would say 8 is I will take a point deduction for two things. 1 point for losing games or not being able to draw when we've had them in hand. We seem to be back to a National League strategy of giving up goals in extra time. Of course, we've had some in extra time, but that's not something that we did the year before. And I would say that the other point deduction is just due to the injuries that we've had. It seems like they've been a little bit more pervasive and a little bit longer term than we've had in the past. So I think if we had played at full strength, we might have achieved a 10 out of 10.
Yeah. I mean, how disappointed have you been on the discipline side of things, though, Kent? Because that's been a source of frustration to many. Lack of discipline, really.
I have to speak for myself. I can't speak for the board. I believe that we should have a more aggressive fining policy for yellows and reds by both players and coaches that don't make sense. And how you define all that, oh my gosh, it's terribly difficult to do. But I do prefer a more self-disciplined team. And I say it this way, Andy, and I know we've talked about this before. We've been out to dinner a number of times. I say it this way. When we start playing 11v12 or 11v13 or 11v14, if we decide we're going to play against the fourth official and the two linos and the ref, now we're playing 11v15. And I would prefer that we just focus on playing 11v11 and realize that they're going to get some bad calls, we're going to get some bad calls, let's just move on.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. I mean, you know, you yourself, when you're a professional golfer, you know yourself, it was very hard to keep you cool at times. So, and you found it very frustrating when things went wrong. You told me that, didn't you? So, you know, I suppose.
I just watched the Masters, and I watched a number of people hit what should be considered a perfect shot, and it ended up being a disaster because the course is just so unforgiving. And I think that in football, you've got sometimes during a match, and you should just expect it, that at some point during every match, you're going to be mad at the ref, you're going to be mad at the lino, you're going to be mad at the fourth official, you're going to be mad at the other coaches as far as on the other side, and maybe the other players, but that's just part of the game. And so you've got to learn to control yourself and, you know, just play to the best of your ability and play through it.
Fair enough. Right, now on to the message board. From top of the JES, the board gave Wellens an improved wage budget this season on the back of last year's promotion and increased it again in January to cover injuries, etc. On Saturday, Derby had a playing budget in excess of ours and it showed. So how do we close that gap on the big budget teams while staying within our wage structure? And what is the percentage increase for playing budget next season? I think you might have covered the last bit already, but
So we can't, under the potential financial fair play rules, we can't have the same budget as Derby. And that's just the way it is. It's based on the amount of revenue that you generate as a club. So since game day ticketing and game day revenue is the number, that's where we start to look at potential stadium situations. So there's really no way for us to get to Derby. And that is the truth, that they do outspend us by a large margin. And we know what those numbers are. So how we compensate for that is really in two ways. Because we've had this problem in the National League with Salford, and we had this problem in League Two. So how we compensate for that is that we have a more efficient spend. We get more out of our players, and we expect Richie to get more out of his players and our players than maybe normally should be expected based on the wage bill. And then the other way that we do that is that we play to Richie's preferred style as often as possible. Now, this year it was much harder to play to Richie's preferred style with the long-term injuries. But, you know, that's the way that we compete. It does, I'll just say this, being number one in spending the most money does not mean that you win the league every year. And it also does not mean that you get promoted every year. Because we could also look at Charlton. You're picking Derby, and that's fine. But we could pick Charlton as a benchmark where they spend quite a bit more money than we do, and yet we played very well, I thought, against them. So it's not just about the money. The money matters, not disagreeing, but it's not just about the money.
Fair enough. Right, on to the next one, which is from Red in the Face. Are there any plans in place to mark the passings of both Peter Bennett and Mal Lucas, who have both recently passed, both ex-Orient players, of course?
There are always plans to do those sorts of things. We really rely on Mark and Mark and Martin, and really, to be honest, Nigel. To think about those things. Those are, because I don't know the history of Leighton Orient to the degree that those three do, or specifically Nigel does. We really rely on, you know, other people to do that. That's not really in my wheelhouse, to be honest.
No, I always said you're the future and some of the past, you know. Some the Nigel knows, yeah, the history, and you're looking forward, so well, that's good.
Yeah, Andy, you know how skewed my view of Leighton Orient history is. We've won two championships in 6 years. So I'm not the right one to ask about Leighton Orient history.
No, that's fair enough. Right. O's old guy. Yeah. O's old guy says, are there plans to, don't laugh at your own gags, Kent. Right. O's old guy said, are there plans to increase the scouting system for players in the future?
Yeah. And that's done via analytics. So it's not a number of people that are out looking at players. It's actually an investment in getting better data on the players around the league and in the UK.
Right. So are we going to increase that budget to do that?
Yep. So that's part of the budgetary spend on the football side, but not on the first team side, as far as the first team playing budget.
Yeah, and as far as the academy goes, I mean, is the investment there being increased or decreased going forward?
The investment in the academy is set by the people who control the academies. I don't know exactly who it is that does that. But we spend a certain amount every year, and that amount is more than what we receive to run the academy. And I think, if I remember the conversation earlier today, our academy this year is going to win something that we've never won before in our history. So not only are the investments seemingly appropriate in the academy, but they're paying off.
Right, good news, good news. Anything that says win is good. Right, right. Orient SC, I think that might be South Carolina. Yeah. I think it's one of our stateside fans. Are you going to get a Hollywood celebrity investor? I think he's looking at Wrexham's results and asking if we're going to go after a Hollywood star ourselves.
Well, we already have a Hollywood star. His name's Nigel Travis. But I think that the Ryan Reynolds story is one of, and I would encourage all of you to go look at their accounts, which are published and online.
Mm.
And what you find out is they generate more money via some TV revenue that they've gotten over a Wrexham, kind of like a Sunderland Till I Die type thing.
Yeah.
And then they also sell an inordinate number of kits, jerseys, shirts. But their cost of doing business is extremely high because they have to make more kits, and they also have to pay all those TV production crews to do all that work. And if you look online, you'll find that Ryan Reynolds has said that when they told him how much money they lost the first 2 years, he actually went and vomited in the toilet. Because he couldn't believe they had lost so much money. So there is an advantage to having Ryan Reynolds, and I think they've done a great job at Wrexham. Clearly, here they come into League One. The circus will come to town next year, and I can't wait to be there for the circus and the show. But there, there are advantages to that style, and there are disadvantages to that style. So I don't think that we would necessarily go out and get a Hollywood type promoter for our club.
Well, there's the podcast out now, of course, The Circus Upstairs, about your predecessors at Leighton Orient, and we're touching on bad ownership. And with you, you raised it before with us, but are you still of the mind that a deposit should be held for any club owners that they do in the States, like they do in the States, a bond scheme perhaps?
Absolutely, I believe in that.
Yeah.
And I believe that if a person has a commitment to the fans and to the community, they should make that commitment clear by putting up 2 years of losses in cash.
Yeah.
And they should maintain 2 years of losses in cash, two years of projected losses. Now, of course, you can fudge with these numbers, but I do think that it is a good idea to make sure that these clubs, if they're going to be run, as 80% of them are, in a deficit style mode, then there definitely should be some sort of insurance for the fans and for the club, because these are community assets that need to be insured going forward.
Excellent. Darren, you want to got a question or two?
Ken, would you say that...
Hi, Ken.
Would you say that new investment... First of all, Ken, we must put something right. We must congratulate you on the birth of your grandchild. Let's get that out there for all the Orient fans. On to the Orient matters. How are we proceeding with new investors? Are we close to some new investors? Is there something going to be hopefully announced soon in that respect?
I don't know how soon it will be. There are potentially new investors, and we're looking at new investors for the training ground and the stadium. And so there are potentially new investors. We had a call about that today, a board call, but I would say, based on what I heard, It might be the end of the summer before there's anything announced on that. So there's a difference. There's a difference between new investment and new investors. So there is additional investment that's already been committed to and that's being funded currently. And then there are new investors that we are out having conversations with. And those new investors are the ones that I'm talking about, you know, probably late summer, some type of an announcement.
And in your own, someone mentioned earlier that you've been a bit quiet on Twitter recently, and you've kindly given us a reason as to, you know, the birth of your grandchild. You can't have anything more significant in your life, I wouldn't imagine, than that. So we understand that. But is it safe to say that you are personally fully committed to Leighton Orient going forward?
Yeah. I mean, Cryptic Kent was probably the most Twitter interaction or X or whatever they call it now, Elon wants to call it. You know, that was the most active that I was. That was in the beginning. And then, you know, it sort of tapered off from there. But my personal commitment to Leighton Orient shows up really in two primary ways. And number one is my time commitment. So being on calls about, you know, with the first team and, you know, all of that that goes with that. And then also, you know, kind of the financial calls that I'm on, the board calls that I'm on. And my conversations with Nigel are every 2 days to every 3 days. So what people don't see is the amount of work that Nigel puts into the club in the background and I put into the club in the background. And that's kind of, so when I think about it, that's how I look at my commitment. And I'm very strong on that because I have a schedule and it tells me that I'm very committed because I can see all the meetings in the future that we're going to have. The Twitter thing is sort of Twitter is a very different world in the sense that there are things that are said on Twitter that maybe in the past I might have commented on. But now instead of me commenting on it, Mark comments on it, or Nigel, really, it's really probably more Mark, or the club comments on, or takes care of. When we were just starting out, I was probably more commentative than I am now. For sure I was then. But that doesn't mean that my commitment's gone away. And the travel thing was really just because my wife asked me not to travel when our grandson was going to be born because she wanted him to be here for that. So I didn't travel for about 2 or 3 months anywhere in the world for anything. So it's not just a Leighton Orient challenge.
Which is totally understandable. The club have made a couple of really good signings this season, in my humble opinion, in both Ethan Galbraith and Ollie O'Neill. Exciting to watch, young, sell on value. There's nothing not to like about these type of signings. Can you perhaps shed any light on whether we've got plans for more of those type? Because going back to what you said about pushing, how do we push? How do we punch above our weight? I think that's personally how we do it. We get those type of players in the building that other clubs have missed out on. Would you concur with that? And would you be able to sort of give any light on that?
Yeah, there's actually two parts to that. And one of those is that League One is a different platform from which to sell players than the National League or League Two. And the reason is that Premier League clubs will look at players that are in the Championship and they will look at players that are in League One. And so that part of it is pretty well known. So that's why we wanted to get to League One as quickly as possible. Then the second thing is that we can also get loans from the Premier League into League One much easier than we could have when we were in the National League. And then the other side of that is while the pay scales in League One are higher than in League Two and in League and in National League, they're not nearly what they are in Championship. So what we hope to do is to be able to sign younger players that have maybe fallen out of favor with their Premier League club or their Championship club, and, you know, build them back up to where they want to be and where we want them to be, and to ride the coattails of their talent. The other thing that happens, too, is that we also look at it from the perspective of, and this is something that's going to come online, where we're making longer commitments to these players. So instead of signing a 2-year deal, and we won't go beyond 2 years, now we're looking at 2 years with a year option or 3 years with a year option. So signing younger players, signing a different maybe style of player or type of player athletically, and all of that plays into that with the idea that we may be selling players more frequently than we have in the past.
So Idris Elmezouni, is he a player that we're still interested in for the summer? Is he a target, do you know?
He is, and it all has to do with what his current parent club decides to do. I believe he's at the end of his contract this summer, if I remember correctly, and he has not given us any indication, nor has has the parent club, we call it, given us any indication. But he is someone that we will be very interested in this summer if he becomes available. I think he will become available, and so I think we will, you know, pursue him aggressively.
And lastly, Ken, a bit more lighthearted, really. I particularly enjoyed the victory at Portsmouth away. Is there a standout game for you this season? What would your standout be?
Unfortunately, Darren, I live in a world where my standout games are the ones we lose, not the ones we win. I think we should have won. I also look at it as an overall. Now, see, I'm more disconnected because I'm watching it, most of them, over a stream. But I think that there have been times this season when we have shown the brilliance that we can and should have next year. And the only thing I hope we do next year are two things. Number one, we play more consistently at the level of our talent. And number two, we play against people who we probably should beat, that we beat them handily, as opposed to making a game of it. So what that means to me is that this year I think we've played to the competition too often, as opposed to us playing at or above our talent level. And that to me is just the sign of a young team.
Excellent. Kent, just finishing off here, because we know you've got to get on and you've probably got to have some evening meal soon after all these meetings, etc. you've had. Is there a player that stood out for you this season for Orient? And if there was a player that you could sign, being realistic, who would it be?
Lionel Messi is who
no,
I would
come
sign.
On, realistic, come on.
Or Mbappe. Okay, so Mbappe. Maybe Mbappe is more realistic. I don't really engage in the idea that there are all these players that are sitting down at the bus stop that we can just go sign. And I don't really keep up with the players that are on other teams. That really Matt Porter does that really well. I think Nigel does that really well. I know Martin does that all the time. Richie does that all the time. So I may be the wrong person to ask of that. As far as the players that have stood out to me this season, Yeah, I think Ruel has done a great job, and he's not as consistent maybe as we want him to be, but he definitely shows up very brightly in certain spots. Ollie O'Neill is definitely someone. I think that Theo played really well until he had his injury. I think Jordan was playing really well, and I actually thought he would be man of the year. That obviously went away. And Ajay is a phenomenal player. I wish that he was more healthy. It kind of sounds like Smudge last year to me. Sorry, if you don't know who Smudge is, that's Little Smith as opposed to Big Smith last year. And, you know, El Mazzuni has played really well. I think there are Tom James in spots, and I think Brownie is fantastic. So I think most of our players have played really well, or else we wouldn't be in 10th.
Is Rule staying? So, that's what they're asking me around the table here. Is Rule staying?
Yeah. We are in contract negotiations with Ruel. I don't know. Anyway, that's a Texas accent problem.
That's all right.
Maybe. So that is something that Martin is working on. We constantly have this challenge of, are we going to sign these players? Are we going to sign these players? Are we going to sign these players? And so we're constantly challenged with that. But overall, I think Seoul played really well. I don't know of a player and, you know, Ford. There are just so many players that have played well for us to finish in 10th, given the injuries that we've had and, you know, the strength of schedule, if you will, that we face.
Okay.
I think we've done really well, and I think the players have done really well.
Thanks, Ken, and thanks for taking the time out to talk to us tonight, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, here's the thing. I'm going to remember some of the names I forgot to mention, and I'm going to remind myself that I never mention individual players by name again. So thanks for that.
That's all right. You take care, Ken.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Ta-da.
Adios.
Bye. Well, that was Kent Teague. Thank you very much, Kent. And, he's in talkative mood, wasn't he? And that's a good move. Yeah. What'd you get out of that, Barry?
I just can't believe you had to back introduce him there. And that was Kent T.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah. You might have just tuned in.
It was. Yeah. Well, we get out of there's a lot there, wasn't there? There's a lot to unpack there. And Kent's always very candid, isn't he? And I think people appreciate that from owners. They don't, you know, we don't want to hear that media trained one game at a time. We'll have to see this, we'll have to see that. He's always very open and honest. And I think the question you asked him, Darren, sort of rephrasing it, are you still in love with Leighton Orient? I think that was what he was trying to say, wasn't it? You know, and I think
trying to guide his level of commitment.
Yeah, and I think he is. I think, yes, his level of commitment has come down for the reasons that he stated, but I think he's still, at heart, he's in love with the club, which is what we want to know, really. And if he's got the best interests of the club at heart, then he's getting new investors in and stuff. It's, you know, he's entitled to take a less proactive approach in the game.
He's trying to do what he wants.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
His time,
yeah.
It's his money, and he mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, none of us will blame him for doing that. That's what I meant.
No, and certainly having a grandchild. You know, look, we're of a similar age to Ken, and it's something I'm looking forward to at some point in my life. So
not with me. If that's what you're angling at.
Yeah. What'd you get out of it, Chris? There's a lot of info coming out.
Yeah, just probably echo what the boys said. Sorry. Probably part of his job, he probably feels like he's achieved that. But great to hear that he's still involved, he's still passionate about the club. Obviously he's got a huge amount of business now that we could always use. But yeah, you know, Saturday's point proves, you know, football doesn't stand still, and as good a season as we've had, you know, we probably need more investment, and we need fresh investment and, you know, fresh people to get to that next sort of level, you know, because we're not going to, you know, you said there 7 to 10 years for a new ground, so we're not going to make up that shortfall by getting people through the gate. We're going to make up that shortfall, unfortunately, by people having to put their hand in their pockets and try and do it that way. So
yeah. I think we touched on that. We talk about the stadium and the clubs, yeah, that we look to. So for instance, Brentford,
yeah,
took 15 years to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Kent's confirmed it's going to take 7 to 10 years.
Easy, yeah.
The club, for me, The model that we should be following now is Peterborough.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's why I ask the questions about Galbraith. And if we start being a club that sort of wheels and deals a bit more in the transfer market in that respect, so we develop a player, get a million quid, say, for him, but that allows us to then spend 250,000 on a player. That's what I think the club needs to evolve to.
100%. And I think they've got probably four or five players. Galbraith, maybe Sanders.
Ollie O'Neill.
They're probably going to get some money. I still think Ruel and Hap will be off in the summer. But, you know, Peterborough have been doing it consistently for 10 or 15 years, right? And I think I picked up saying on our WhatsApp group the other week is that we have gone down that model. But I think there's games like Saturday where, and probably even more so with the likes of Prattley retiring, that you have to mix those youngsters with a couple of real
senior pros.
Yeah, senior pros that know the way around the dressing room, know the way around a Tuesday night away, because there are times this season where we've been found short physically, even from, going away from home and conceding three set pieces. That's not great. We need a couple more leaders, I think.
We need a balance. Yeah.
So, but definitely, as I say, that's the route for me, because as I say, I know people have their qualms about the academy, but I'm in that academy four or five times this week, and I see the kids that they constantly churn out and, get some money for before they even get to the first team. It's a very successful academy.
Could you fill in the gap with Kent there? Because I didn't know what the academy is about to achieve. You might have a better perspective.
So I think this year, they stand a chance of winning the Merit League. So right. the academy. So that in the first half of the season, the youth team struggled a little bit, but I think they squeezed into the top half. And I think I've only noticed lose one game. So that, I think they're right up there. I think they beat Luton the other week 5-0. Yeah. But they're successful, and I don't know what they're breeding them, because, as I say, at all age groups, there are some huge kids in that academy.
Big on, mate. Yeah. Just want to obviously say before we close, chaps, congratulations to Dame Lindsay Martin on winning her award. Oh, sorry, yes. Is that not out of the bag yet?
Yeah, no.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Dame. Oh, no.
Trust you.
Let that out of the bag.
Can't rely on you.
No. Yeah, congratulations to Lindsay, as everyone probably agrees. She's a stalwart, isn't she?
It's nice to see people behind the scenes.
She will kill me for saying that on the. She kills me every Saturday.
It's nice to see them getting some recognition.
I think she used to want to kill me, actually, full stop, but yeah, never mind.
Yeah, no, it's like Darren said, it's nice to see people that work hard for a club get rewarded like that.
Yeah, just before we go, that one thing I would touch on here with Kent is he just said about not expecting to finish in the playoffs next season. Now we're trying to flog season tickets. Was that maybe not the best thing?
It's realistic. He's always candid. He's always realistic, and the league will be stronger next year, I think. We're always looking to improve, and if we improve in our playing style, we still finish around the same area. I still think that is going forward.
See, Andy. I think that's a subject for another. I don't think it will be as strong next year. If you lose Derby, Portsmouth and Bolton, that's three ex-Premier League teams. All right, Wrexham have got money, but they're going to take it.
Stockport will be strong as well.
Thank you, guys. I've got to go. Show's coming up to an end, I should say, and Nick's on next. So, ta-da, have a great week, everyone.
This is our club, we are proud. So sing it up and sing aloud. We performed in 1881, the Clapton Orient had so begun. The old story on it runs, we're late and Orient from E10. Whatever challenges come our way, the Orient faithful are here to stay. We will live to fight another day, we're late and Orient from E10. Late and Orient from E10. Yeah! Day. We're late at Orient from E10. Late at Orient from E10. This is our club, we are proud. So sing it out and